And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yo, yo, welcome to another episode of the Forum Club. I'm your co-host, Yovan Buha, joined by my other co-host, Bill Oram. Bill, how are you doing?
Doing great, Yovan. Good to see your face again. Last saw you, just a few hours ago at Staples Center after a very weird Lakers win against the Rockets. And then we'll be back there on Thursday to see the Thunder again. So a busy week in Lakerland, just catching a little off day here between games.
So the Lakers have won three games in a row and five of their last six. And I think there was some panic with the way the season started, the 0-6 preseason, losing to the Warriors and the Suns, dropping that game in OKC, which still to me is inexcusable. But I think that is kind of in the rear view right now. I mean, I know it's been a relatively easy schedule and they're supposed to beat the Rockets and the Cavs and they're going to play the Thunder again on Thursday. But where are you at with where this team, is at, right? Where 8 games in, 5-3, top 10 offense. They've actually crept up defensively up to 16th now after being in the bottom five for the first few games. So, you know, zooming out macro lens of this season, 8 games in, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, I'm still in wait and see mode, I think, because of what you alluded to with the schedule. We really haven't seen the Lakers beat a really good team yet this year. Memphis is kind of a mid-level good team, probably a back-end playoff team in the West, obviously with a lot of talent. They snuck by them. But otherwise, you know, the Lakers have lost to the other good teams they've played, Phoenix and Golden State early on, and they've kind of, you know, gotten by against these lower caliber teams. So I'm looking ahead to when the schedule picks up a little bit here, starting this weekend, going to Portland. I know Portland struggled. That's always been a tough matchup for the Lakers. And then you get Miami next week and then the big road trip going to Milwaukee, Boston, and so forth. So I am excited to start seeing some of those games where I think we might get a better sense, but also the Lakers still aren't healthy. You know, they're still missing so many players that we don't really have a sense of what this is going to look like when they're healthy. I mean, how much is Austin Reeves going to be playing when the Lakers, you know, have their guys available? Probably not at all. You know, Malik Monk has been up and down, but he's been kind of an important piece of their offense. Probably not the case when Wayne Ellington, THT, Trevor Ariza are all healthy, you know, by December. So it's really hard to make sense of what the Lakers are going to be, especially if you're just looking for evidence that they are, you know, the favorite in the West, because so far they haven't looked like the favorite in the West. But you can excuse that in part because of the guys they've had out and because, you know, of the way the schedule's been stacked. But, you know, it is concerning that they had the letdown against Oklahoma City. It's concerning that they're squeaking by teams like San Antonio, Cleveland, and Houston last night. I mean, that was, you know, that was the game that they trailed for most of it until a big fourth quarter from LeBron, and then they nearly lost it. And there would have been some controversy, obviously, if they had lost. But, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. had a three-pointer that would have given Houston a one-point win. But actually, I do want to talk to you about this controversy. Like, what is your take on the points coming off the board in the fourth quarter? Because Frank Vogel was hot about it. He was really angry. Could have cost his team the game, I suppose. And for those who didn't see it, essentially, the Lakers had a possession in the fourth quarter where Kent Bazemore gets fouled, goes to the free throw line to make it makes two free throws to put the Lakers up 10. It was a foul on the ground. The referees thought that it was the fifth foul for the Rockets, putting them in the bonus. Multiple possessions go by. They are alerted to the fact that the Rockets actually weren't in the bonus, so therefore, free throws shouldn't have been awarded. So during a timeout, those points came off the board, those two Lakers points. So the Lakers went from having 116 points to 114 points. Meanwhile, the Rockets had scored five quick points. So all of a sudden, what was a 10-point lead the Lakers had is suddenly down to three. Now, the Lakers were most upset because they didn't get the possession that they would have gotten if the call had been officiated correctly and the call had been on the ground. The Lakers would have had a side out of bounds. They would have had a possession and, you know, an opportunity to score. Frank Vogel felt like once, you know, it was kind of settled history, the referee screwed up. He can't take the points off the board. You know, the counterpoint is if the Rockets had gone on to lose by 1-2 points, you know, or whatever, almost no matter what the result would have been, those 2 points could have swung momentum or whatever else. I think we can all agree that by the letter of the law, the referees handled it correctly. But, you know, Vaughn, do you agree with Frank Vogel that this is something the league should be looking at and that should change? Because, I mean, listen, we were about an inch of that Kevin Porter three-pointer, which by the way, it was a good-looking shot. It was online. You and I were sitting, like, right in the path of the ball. I thought it was in. I mean, there would have been absolute mayhem if he had made that.
I mean, Frank Vogel would have certainly been fined after the game. That's what I wrote last night. That, like, you know, the Lakers avoided a massive Frank Vogel fine with how upset he was, even with the win and with it working in their favor. I do think it's something the league has to look at and address, not necessarily just for this game, but for future situations moving forward. Because to me, mistakes are part of a game. I mean, how many times do we see, like, you have that one viral meme of, like Kevin Durant being like 2 feet out of bounds on like the Golden State floor and it wasn't called in. And I believe that was a playoff game. I think it was against the Rockets in a playoff game. Kevin Durant's like 2 feet out of bounds with the ball and the refs don't call that. And like, can you retroactively go back and take that? Like, to me, it's the refs messed up. They misread how many team fouls there were. They awarded the Lakers and then realized their mistake a few possessions later. And like, I mean, I think the only real, like, if you're going to take the points away, you do have to give the Lakers another possession. So I don't know if that, and it was Lakers ball when they did that. Lakers had just called timeout because Houston had cut it to 5. Then during that timeout, that's when they reviewed it, took away the points, and all of a sudden it was a 3-point game. So in my opinion, if you're going to take away those 2 points, give the Lakers a second possession, you know, almost like a game of 21 or something where with buckets where, you know, they get their possession and then afterwards they get their possession again. But that to me would be the only fair way. Cause again, the point of free throws and the whole team foul process is to reward the team that is getting fouled. And the Lakers did not get a reward for Kent Bazemore stealing the ball, having a fast break opportunity and being fouled. You know, they didn't get that possession back and they lost the points that Kent Bazemore earned at the free throw line. So to me, it's again, like we can pick and choose where we kind of find the mistakes. There's always times players are stepping out of bounds. Sometimes there's a 2 versus a 3 that isn't called. Sometimes they review it. Sometimes they don't. That to me is a little bit, you know, it's a made field goal. You're just changing a 2 versus a 3. But this to me was, it would have been insane if Kevin Porter made that shot and the Rockets won. And you know, the Lakers would have had a legitimate gripe, in my opinion, with the league, which is the way that this was handled.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, and you make a good point. I don't know how you can actually execute the idea of an additional possession. It feels like something that it's just not part of the game. So I just don't think it could be done. You know, and this is more of a feel thing or a gut thing as opposed to actual like interpretation of the rule. But Kent Bazemore getting 2 free throws does feel more like a just reward for what you described, you know, burning the extra possession, getting the steal and getting fouled. That does seem closer to like an honest application of what would have happened. You know, the Lakers would have had points. Like there's there's no other scenario where the Lakers would have lost the possession. Like, there's probably a, you know, whatever, a 40 some percent chance that the Lakers would have scored on the sideline out of bounds, would have gotten 2 points. Maybe they would have gotten a three. So maybe the Lakers ended up, you know, we just don't know. So them getting 2 points or having the opportunity to earn 2 points via free throw, via free throws, feels like kind of the fairest thing. That said, the call was screwed up, but like, I just don't know. Cause Frank made the point, and he's right. You coach totally different, you know, up two possessions with 2 minutes left than you do, you know, up one possession. So in a one possession game, two possession game. So it's just really tricky. I don't know the right answer. It's not something we've seen a lot of. And I think that's, you know, because generally the referees get things like this right. I mean, that's a very basic part of officiating. So to have something like that, you know, get messed up obviously is a rarity. And it's one of those things where it's like, if this was something that was happening often, maybe the league needs to take a look at it. But I mean, it's just one of those real rarities of rule enforcement, but I don't know. Anyway, didn't happen.
It was erased from the play-by-play. I love that. There's just this gap in the play-by-play. Like Kent Bazemore gets a steal on his foul and there's no,
and then the ball.
But one thing I want to touch on from last night is Mr. LeBron James. And I know this is a Lakers podcast, but I feel like we don't talk about LeBron enough and haven't talked about him enough to start this season. And his numbers got a little boosted off of last night, but entering through the first eight games, 25 points a night, 5.5 rebounds. That's a little bit low compared to his kind of career numbers, but 7 assists, 2.3 steals. His efficiency has not been great by his standards, but it is increasing. And he did have the ankle injury, which kind of knocked him out. But to me, LeBron, his numbers are right there with what he was averaging last season. And last season's numbers declined towards the end of the year after he came back from that 30 plus game absence from the ankle injury. But to me, I've kind of been wondering the last week or so, like, why can't LeBron James win MVP? If he picks up where he left off last season, where he was the favorite or co-favorite with Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid for MVP, when he went out in March against the Hawks, like, why can't he do that again if he's posting the same numbers and this Lakers team is currently in the top four in the West? Like, I expect them to stay there for most of the season. Like, why can't he win MVP again? I feel like everyone's talking about Jokic repeating or Giannis or Luka or KD and kind of looking for anybody else but LeBron. But I feel like we kind of had this dialogue last season of like,
right,
it's LeBron. Are we overthinking this? Like, he's still, you know, probably the best player in the league at his peak. Like, what have you thought of his start to the season? And just last night, I noticed he was taking the ball to the rim way more.
Yeah.
And he had multiple finishes.
He was also picking on Alperen Şengün a lot. Yeah. Like, I mean, that was a matchup that he just was. I mean, when we talk about that run in the fourth quarter where he scored 10 straight points, I'd have to go back and look, but several of those were just drives against, you know, a rookie who looked like a fish out of water against him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is some of that too.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. I just also think, like, even to, you know, through this game, LeBron's average shot attempt this season per Basketball Reference is 14.6 feet, which is the longest of his career. So this is the most jump shot heavy we've seen LeBron be to start a season, or at least, you know, through a season. And I do expect that to decrease. I think he'll start playing closer to the rim, but what he said it after the game, that he was excited for this game because he had been rehabbing his ankle. He started to feel more like himself. And I felt just that burst that that is the trademark LeBron burst. He's going downhill and it's just the slight misdirection where he can do things at 6'9" that nobody else in the league can do at 6'9". And that to me was, we had seen it in flashes here and there, but this was, you know, I think he had 2 threes and a couple jumpers and everything else was at the rim. And that to me was a departure from the way he had been approaching games through the first five.
Yeah. And I mean, he's shooting on average this season, you know, through six games, two more 3-pointers per game than in a full season in his career. You're probably right. That comes down once the Lakers, other shooters come back, once Wayne Ellington, Trevor Ariza, someone else who's injured, I'm forgetting, come back. Once they get those guys on the floor, maybe LeBron doesn't need to be the floor spacer as much as he has been so far. But I do feel like, I felt like we were seeing LeBron kind of round into form, because he dealt with the ankle in what, game three of the season against Memphis. And then missed a couple and then, really played through it. And it did seem like last night was maybe the night where he was kind of over it. He avoided something more serious with the injury against the Grizzlies, but it obviously was hampering him. And I feel like he looked a lot better. So to your question about could he win MVP? I mean, yes, but it is just interesting because it is such a narrative driven award. And LeBron is forever a good narrative candidate. And last year he would have especially been, after having led the Lakers to a championship and coming back, the way he played despite the short off season and coming back and playing at such a high level with really no rest was kind of inspiring. This year, though, I think the narrative swings more, well, LeBron has so much help. Of course, he's going to look good. Of course, his team is going to be good. He's got Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis to take the burden off of him. And I think that's kind of the knock on LeBron is, can LeBron possibly do enough to win MVP while also making sure everybody else gets fed as well? And, so far, I mean, you're right. The numbers are close enough to what he was doing last year that the answer could be yes. That said, I just think the Lakers would need to be, really good. So good that you're looking at it and you say, well, the MVP has to come from the Lakers. And then, well, who's the MVP on the Lakers? It's obviously LeBron. Although I would direct you to my story with Rajon Rondo a couple of weeks ago, where he said that he wanted Anthony Davis to be the MVP. So obviously, a little bit of a divide in the Lakers locker room over who the MVP of the league should be if it comes from the Lakers. But, to me, I think it could happen. I think, LeBron obviously.
No rest votes?
Yeah, probably not, right? Yeah, probably not. The turnovers are
Mello, though. Mello might be.
I mean, listen, the Lakers are going to have the MVP in LeBron, the sixth man of the year in Carmelo Anthony, and rookie of the year, Austin Reeves. They're going to sweep, full sweep. Defensive player
coach
of the year,
Frank Vogel, for coaching a top 10 defense with this group.
with this team, yep. You know what's interesting is because scoring is down around across the league, the Lakers were like 25th in defensive efficiency through like five games with a rating of 111 points per 100 possessions allowed, which last year over the course of the full season would have ranked like 11th in the league. But because scoring is down so far, so much in the league, it looked really glaring and dropped them down to 26th at the time. So not surprising that it's creeping up, but also not surprising it's creeping up when they're playing, really bad teams. I mean, Houston, is not a good offensive team, despite what we saw last night. The Lakers held them to 85 points in the game on Sunday. So there's, they are working with a little bit of a stacked deck in terms of, making the eye test look maybe a little bit better than it is.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's talk about Russ. I think we got to do the weekly Russ check-in. I think this past week has been better. The OKC game, the quadruple double with the 10 turnovers, that was sort of the nadir of Westbrook's.
Look at you, USC education.
of Westbrook's season, maybe. I mean, it's tough to top 10 turnovers in your return game to your former team. But I think since then he's taken better shots. He's handled the ball better in terms of just decision making and not turning it over and predetermining his passes. And I think defensively there's been a little bit more effort. I still think that my three issues are those with him in terms of I still don't love any Russell Westbrook three. Like if it's 5 seconds left on the shot clock, he's wide open, it's a catch and shoot situation, sure, take the shot. But the pull-ups, shots with 15 plus seconds on the shot clock, like I don't love those threes from him. Sure. The turnovers are still an issue, and the defense. Like there was several plays last night where Rockets guys got behind him either on cuts or on offensive rebounds, and it's just he continues to not be attentive when he's not directly on the ball. So you know, those are kind of the three issues I've had all season with him. I've seen some progress and you know, some regression, but overall, I think Russ is trending in a better direction. I think, again, it's never going to be a perfect fit, and there's going to be growing pains, and I think there's going to be more adjustment once Kendrick Nunn and Talen Horton-Tucker are back, because those are two guys who also kind of, you know, need the ball, want the ball as secondary playmakers, and they're going to have to figure out that sort of fit. But to me, I guess like the Russ experience is getting better, and yeah. I think we expected this. We weren't really sure when, but and as to your point earlier, like you got to factor in the competition. So I want to see Russ do this against Portland. I want to see him do it against Miami. I want to see him do it on that road trip. But I do think he is playing better. And I know we've been fairly critical of him, and I think it's been justified. But you also got to give him his flowers when he's performing better. And I think he has been for the most part over the past week or so.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I felt like, you know, his threes when he's taken them have been, you know, at logical times. I don't think, I feel like he's been forcing things. His turnovers have been lower the last few games. I mean, like you said, the Oklahoma City game is really an outlier. I mean, there's only two games that he's had more than four turnovers, you know, in the first seven. And, you know, I feel like with Russell Westbrook, four turnovers is kind of an okay number. You know, in general, I think that he has, you know, tried to do things the right way. I think he has been trying to adjust his game, and he's spoken pretty candidly about it, that he's doing things that he's needing to do things that he's never done. And I think this is kind of what everyone hoped for, or was kind of curious to see if it would happen when he was traded here, which was, is the chance to win a championship for his hometown, to play with LeBron James, is that all enough to get Russell Westbrook to not change? That's too big of a word, I feel like, but to sort of make some compromises. And I feel like we've seen a willingness from him to do that. And over the course of a long season, and especially with what we know about him as kind of a second half player anyway, I think it's encouraging. I don't know that it means it's going to work. I don't know if it means that they're going to, you know, win the championship, but I think it means that, you know, that there is a significant enough buy-in that they've got a shot.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned him doing, you know, kind of adjusting his game. And I think I have noticed him screening more, and that they have that one action where LeBron has the ball on the right side of the floor. He'll come down and set a pin down for AD, and AD kind of comes up and curls off of that. And then they try to get him with a mismatch, or at least catching the ball on the move. And like Russ has been getting better at that. But I guess a couple more things I want to touch on before we wrap up here. The starting lineup. And I think that's been, it's been a point of contention on Lakers Twitter for basically all season. I think the second they committed to going big, there's going to be a lot of detractors and people upset with that. And the numbers have bore it out. Well, I don't have the exact figures in front of me, but in terms of effectiveness, the Lakers' best center combinations in order this season have been Dwight and AD, one, AD at the 5-2, and then a distant third, DeAndre Jordan and AD as the 5 and the 4. So I've been of the mindset, start small. And I was, once they said, you know, DeAndre was the starting center, I was like, okay, let's evaluate this. Let's see how it's going. To me, DeAndre has been the least effective rotation player that they've had. And I'm of the mindset now currently that you either go with AD at the 5, or if you want to start big, you start Dwight, because to me, there's a big enough gap between Dwight and DeAndre that it isn't just they're kind of similar. So like we like Dwight's energy with the bench. It's to me like you're playing a negative rotation player who, aside from getting wide open dunks that, like, you know, what Westbrook feeds him in semi-transition, he's just not really doing anything. And I think it's really been like, he can still rebound. He had 9 rebounds last night, but the defense, his pick and roll defense is just not good. And teams continue to feast on him. He's too low in his coverages. And even like Christian Wood took him off the dribble multiple times last night. And it's like, I know Christian Wood's solid, but he was making him look like prime Kevin Garnett driving to the rim. And I just think,
Prime Kevin Garnett would have scored off that inbounds play with 6 seconds left.
He would have. But I was DeAndre on the floor? I don't think DeAndre was on the floor. So, I mean, yeah. And I guess I get that Frank, there's an engagement kind of dynamic here where you don't want to bury the guy, especially coming off of a situation in Brooklyn. But that raises the larger question of why did you commit to him in the first place? When, you know, I think we have a couple years of evidence that he has not been an effective rotation player for a bit. So Frank said that they've liked the small unit, but he does plan on going bigger again. He didn't specify if that meant DeAndre specifically. He did leave that up for interpretation and said that he's spoken with both DJ and Dwight about their roles, about them kind of vacillating a bit of you're going to start some games, you're going to be the backup some games, you might not play some games. So I like the current configuration of AD, LeBron, Bays, Avery Bradley, and Russ. I would like to see that moving forward. Maybe you insert Wayne Ellington once he's healthy and then roll with Dwight as your backup. What do you think of the small lineup versus the big lineup, how it's looked the past couple games? And I know, again, Rockets are probably the second worst team in the league, so I don't think it's a fair encapsulation of what this could look like necessarily, but I'm still pro AD at the five. Nothing I've seen in the first eight games has changed that. And I guess that's kind of my stance until further notice.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you. I mean, I guess I didn't realize that DeAndre had been as bad as you say he has been, but I take your word for it. And then, you know, I just like Dwight better. I just like him better as a player. And I think that ultimately the Lakers are their most lethal with AD at the five. And they have the personnel on the wings, I think, when they're healthy. When they're healthy, assuming Trevor Ariza can still be a contributing player at 30,000 years old, then I expect he's not even the oldest guy on the team. That's not fair. But like, I do feel like that's the guy who can help them and allows them to go as small as they want to go. So I think when they're healthy, I think that what you're saying is probably true. But I think the Thunder game is going to be an interesting test because they started big against the Thunder in OKC and played really darn well until that second half collapsed. So I'll be curious to see if it's DeAndre back in the middle, but also we don't know if Dwight's healthy, and if Dwight's not healthy, I don't see them starting big. So it's where they are.
Yeah. And that's another factor. We don't know what they would have done if Dwight had not been out. And you know, it makes it pretty easy. Well, DeAndre, go to the bench. But let's wrap up here. For Bill, I'm Jovan. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'll be back later in the week after the Thunder game. Talk to you guys then.